You're listening to Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, this is TNT, and filling in for the gigantic shoes of Mike Ryan is Robert Brennan. And before I introduce our very special guests of the hour, I'll just go through a little bit of the latest news. Breaking today on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC News, that Ottawa has decided to drop the vaccination requirement for people entering Canada and random COVID-19 testing at airports and make use the use of the Arrive Can app optional by the end of this month. Elsewhere, this news story was linked to the embarrassing display of Trudeau doing his rendition of Bohemian Rhapsody in the wake of the Queen's passing. I don't know if there's any connection, but certainly it'll be good news to many that Canada is dropping the vaccine requirement to enter the country. This after over 2 years. That's a very long time. One will see in time whether it positively or otherwise influences the outcome of the next Canadian election, which is a while off. Commenting on a recent 60 Minutes interview with Joe Biden, and I'll preface this also by saying that we have a China versus West or China plus West expert on later. When asked what the US would do if China was to make moves against Taiwan in the sense of an invasion, there was initially fluffing around with ambiguous answers before saying, yes, US would militarily engage China in that event. So this is going off the script of the State Department, which is usually in favor of what you might call a strategic ambiguity, which is basically saying, well, we won't say what we would do. And this was hotly followed by the State Department saying, well, the US won't be drawn on what it would do if China took that action. And so once again, we have an example of, you know, a lack of cohesion in the US administration between its commander-in-chief and the rest of the administration. But rather than see it as perhaps a president that is overly strong and hawkish against China, we could perhaps see it as a president who's weak against the 60 Minutes interviewer themselves, in so much as he was pushed for an answer and he felt he had to give an inappropriate one. It's also contradicts the US recognition of the so-called One China policy. That is that Taiwan is part of China, and it is administered in Beijing as opposed to Taipei. This goes back to the 1979 Carter administration, when there were links that were to be forged between the US and China. Of course, everything has changed now in the wake of the fall of the USSR and what's happening in Russia, and Russia versus Ukraine. So, but without further ado, I'll bring on our first guest, who needs no introduction. And in fact, this gentleman had a very lengthy interview with Malcolm Roberts, another TNT presenter, over the weekend. I encourage you to check that out. This is Dr. Philip Altman. Dr. Philip Altman is the guru of drug regulation in Australia. He's had a career of over four decades in clinical trials and drug development, drug regulation, bringing many of the medications that many of you perhaps have prescribed or get over the counter into you as a consumer's pantry or your medicine chest or whatever. I had thought of just sort of rather comedically introducing him as the man who got Botox onto the marketplace. And with that in his CV, what else does he need to say? But without further ado, Dr. Altman.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
How are you? We're like together all the time nowadays. We did the conference in Melbourne, and now we're on here.
Yeah, we seem to be seeing a lot of each other.
But that's a good thing. It's certainly a good thing for me. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I think one of the main things that's happened just in recent times, and I've been involved in this COVID thing and this vaccine thing for some time, as you well know, is that I actually, when I spoke in Melbourne, and you were there on September the 10th, I gave our Therapeutic Goods Administration, our equivalent of the FDA here, a real big serve, right? I said that there have been lots of mistakes made, concerning lockdowns and vaccine mandates and masking and so forth. And although these mistakes have been made, they're widely recognized now, and the U.S. FDA is and the CDC is looking to review their mistakes of the past. Our TGA and our health bureaucrats here have shown no sign of reflection, no admission that they've made mistakes, no sign of introspection. I gave them a pretty big serve, right? But I have to tell you, there is a glimmer of hope here. There is a glimmer of hope. It was just announced not too long ago, just a few days ago, that our TGA is prepared to review submissions concerning the prescribing of ivermectin, which has basically been banned for the use in COVID here in Australia and elsewhere. And they formally opened up submissions to the TGA to review and reconsider their position. So I've been very much involved in that. And that is the very first glimmer of hope that our health bureaucrats are rethinking what they've done in the past. And that's, I take that at face value. They're intelligent people, they're highly qualified, and I'm hoping that they will just evaluate the data that's submitted and come to a fair decision. So that is a glimmer of hope, Robert.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's very gracious of you to take it on face value, because were we inclined to cynicism, God forbid, we would say that, well, that they were bad faith actors. Clearly, they effectively banned the medication for reasons of trying to nudge slash push the consumer towards the vaccine. And now they're just trying to walk things back, save face. And so that be their motivation rather than any genuine scientific openness. And as you've added, they have to follow in the wake of what the CDC has done, but with a timing appropriate for them.
Yes. Yeah. Well that's right. That's how I view it. I will take it on face value. We'll wait and see what the result is. I know what the submission looks like. I've been highly involved in that submission. I know what it looks like. I know what the data is. And this all started with some pretty big lies. And I can tell you, I'm looking on my screen now at a statement, which is still up on Twitter by the US FDA, which was made on the 21st of August, 2021, about ivermectin. And I'll tell you what the brief statement says. It says, quote, why would you not use ivermectin? Webpage. It was asking the question. You are not a horse. You are not a cow. Seriously, y'all stop it. Unquote. Now that, if you look on Twitter now, you will actually see that quote. That is misinformation from the US FDA. It was followed by similar advice from our Australian chief health officers here in Australia. It was just unbelievable. You can contrast those statements to the view of the chief medical officer for England, Professor Sir Chris Whitty, mm-hmm. who, this was before the pandemic, said, quote, and this is a quote in reference to ivermectin, quote, "The drug has proven to be safe, full stop. Doses up to 10 times the approved limit are well tolerated by healthy volunteers, full stop. Adverse reactions are few and usually mild, full stop," unquote. Mm. So you had these conflicting views, and really anyone who looks at the facts would know that ivermectin, in terms of its safety in pharmacological terms, right, is one of the safest drugs that's available. It's been prescribed billions of times, and its safety record is second to none. So when we started this pandemic and we were given this advice about ivermectin, which was a potentially useful drug, it really made me think about what the hell was going on. And that's the main reason why I became involved in all this. My focus then turned to the vaccines, but in more recent times, it's turned back to ivermectin because of the possibility of the TGA reversing their inappropriate recommendations regarding ivermectin.
Yes, that's right. And just to put the listeners in the picture, it was once more or less freely available, sort of off-label for reasons beyond its original indications, that being that it was saved God knows how many lives and reduced the morbidity of millions upon millions of people in the developing world, particularly in Africa, with river blindness, for example. It's also found useful in scabies and the like, and which is endemic in parts of our indigenous population and elsewhere. And so, that was where its safety record was proven. But when it became of interest as a treatment for COVID, suddenly it's this incredibly dangerous horse paste, and the propaganda machine came out against it. You'll also recall there was those stories, I think at least one of them was completely fabricated, of someone in some middle America hospital who had taken an overdose and was very, very ill because they used the horse dewormer. Complete fabrication. And then, of course, the most famous example was when Joe Rogan, who gets something like 10 million viewers per podcast, said that he was using it. Well, once again, it's a dangerous horse paste.
Yes, well, there was a similar sort of report here in Sydney. And when people tried to follow up on the details, they couldn't find the patient, they couldn't find the records, etc. It looked like it was a well-orchestrated media campaign playing out in various parts of the world. I'm convinced of that. And it even pulled in people to comment who I know, who really shouldn't have been drawn into this debate. And I'm sure that they regret it now.
Mm, yes, that's right. And so, this is the tack that I've taken from the beginning, is that not being an ivermectinologist, so to speak, and the literature was quite vast, I said, well, I can't attest to it being somewhere between modestly effective and highly effective, but it's damn well clear that it's safe, and that's a reason, if anything, to keep it on the market.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. It's widely known to be a drug with a high therapeutic index. That is, you and I both know what that means. It basically means that the difference between the therapeutic dose and the toxic dose, the dose required, is a large multiple. In this case, probably more than 10 times. That most drugs don't can't meet that criteria. So it's relatively safe, and it's provided off prescription in many countries, and countries have used it to control COVID in hundreds of millions of people. It's been the subject of submissions that I've made to the TGA going back to August of last year.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yes. And you know, one of the cynical, I think, let's say, race exploitation reasons given why it was taken restricted in the market, highly restricted the market, only to gastroenterologists and infectious disease specialists for particular indications, was that it would shorten the market supply for the indigenous population, as I said, that might need it for scabies or might need it for other parasitic infections. Whereas I'd be thinking that its availability was still, was quite able to be produced in bulk quite rapidly, very cheap. And given that scabies is endemic, and given the small potential of its benefit as a treatment for COVID, in COVID vulnerable Aboriginal populations, why not just give it and kill two birds with one stone and make sure there's a supply?
Well, that's the logical sort of approach. There's never been any evidence that ivermectin is in short supply.
Yes.
It just didn't happen. I think that was just an excuse to drive people toward the vaccine only health policy that our government has put in place. They actually said that in the official press releases when they announced that the prescribing of ivermectin would be really restricted to prevent its use from being used in COVID. One of the three reasons, apart from the supply and so forth, was that it might discourage vaccine uptake. Well, that's true. It's a good policy if you think that the vaccine only approach was a good policy. And now, looking back how this pandemic has unfolded, the vaccines haven't lived up to their expectations.
No, they haven't. And we'll get to that just after a quick ad break. This is TNT.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I mean, you have the government, you know, labeling parents who speak up at school boards, terrorists, domestic terrorists, of course. And you have everything from teachers don't have to report to parents once they're in the school. It seems like teachers and the teachers' unions now believe that they own the rights to your kids when it comes to, even if the kid wants a sex change or wants to use a different bathroom or wants to be called by a he or a she if they're the opposite, and they don't have to tell parents. And I mean, it goes down the line. And what concerns you the most as a parent, and in your view, what should parents be concerned about the most when they send their kids to school?
You know, I think the most concerning thing is just the lack of transparency. The thought that parents don't deserve to know what's going on in schools and in their kids' education is so ridiculous, considering we all pay taxes and we all elect school board members, yet somehow we're told that we don't have a right to know what's going on.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
On the day that he was inaugurated, the Washington Post had an article on impeaching him.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
They had an absolute legitimate meltdown.
If you try to change a system that big, the system fights back.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
I actually became infuriated that someone had allowed Zuckerberg to tip the scale.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided.
This was the greatest billionaire assault on election integrity we've ever seen.
A billionaire-funded plot against the president.
Do you believe that they used the COVID emergency as an excuse to pull this partisan voter turnout operation?
Am I allowed to give you a one-word answer? Yes.
Rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
The radio station everyone is talking about, TNT, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening.
Keep listening.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Robert Brennan, my very special guest, Dr. Philip Altman. We're talking about ivermectin, the chance that it can be returned to off-label use for COVID and whatever else the practitioner in good faith wants to use it for. The other reason that the TGA gave for, and we were touching upon this earlier, for restricting it is that it would steer people away from the vaccine. But as I've said many times, they didn't do any consumer market research. There'd be people who were so deathly afraid of the virus that they would want to take everything in the kitchen sink. They'd want to have the vaccine and ivermectin, so that they were depriving the consumer of any additive benefit that ivermectin might provide. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, that was the aim. That was a real threat. These products, these COVID-19 so-called vaccines, were promoted as vaccines, and the public has a default position where most people consider them to be safe. They don't understand that vaccines are serious medications. There's a long list of vaccines that have been proven to be unsafe and have been withdrawn. However, the government instituted a fear campaign, which was very, very clever. And it drove people to the vaccine option without even questioning it. No one really understood in the general public what these mRNA therapeutics were really about. I mean, it was new to everyone. This was blue sky, new generation technology that was usually reserved for small numbers of seriously ill people, treatment of cancer, genetic defects, and so forth. Never really conceived before the pandemic as being used worldwide in healthy people, in infants and children, pregnant women. That never crossed people's minds, but there was this huge rush because of the fear campaign. And it's a bit of a pity.
It is a bit of a pity. And likewise, there'd be people who would decide that they didn't want the vaccine no matter what, and so you're depriving them of anything at all. It's like, you know, you walk into a bar and you can have whiskey.
Yeah.
But not water. Yeah.
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 That's exactly right.
Yes. And meanwhile, it pays to read the industry news, not the mainstream news, because Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, is telling Fierce Biotech, quote, at least $25 billion of risk-adjusted revenues by 2030, they expect. It's interesting that the use of language, too, the risk-adjusted. They consider that the possibility that there might be adverse effects, they might have to pay for them, there might be adverse publicity, but still the check's in the mail and onwards and upwards.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. At the moment, the vaccine manufacturers have indemnity. They are covered for any damages, but only if they've been honest in reporting their research. Mm-hmm. And there are legal cases ongoing now in the U.S. which could change that position. And if they're found to have behaved unlawfully or fraudulently, their litigation cover disappears. So that's an interesting point. But I like to mention a big inflection point in this pandemic and the use of the vaccines, and that is the recent decision by the drug regulator in Denmark, who are very good. They had a very high reputation. In fact, the reputation to match the Australians, the British, and the Americans. And they have come out and said that the vaccines are no longer recommended for people under 50 years of age. Now, that's quite a statement. And I see that as a real inflection point. There was a minor inflection point more than a month ago when the Moderna shot for infants 6 months of age to 5 years was not recommended for all infants. They said it was only recommended on a limited basis and the distribution would be limited. So that was the first sign that there was some sort of crab walking back due to the safety risk. But this recommendation from Denmark is highly significant, and it may well be followed by similar recommendations in other countries.
Yeah, so one might expect to see the information flow from the advanced Nordic nations to the Anglo Northern Hemisphere, and then for it to gradually trickle down to us. Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, so you're preparing this, the submission to end all submissions for the TGA, although I imagine it's not the... It's not going to be your magnum opus. That's going to be yet to come. But but watch this space, people. See if Dr. Altman succeeds in having rationality return to the TGA. And be an amazing guest. Let's get you on sometime. This is TNT.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Police in the US have made a chilling discovery after finding a dismembered body stuffed inside two suitcases inside a New York City apartment. 9 million Australians are being warned of a heightened risk of identity theft after their personal information was stolen in the largest cyber attack the country has ever seen. And at least 90 people have drowned as flooding cripples Jigawa State in Nigeria.
A man's home is his castle. But his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia. And they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
Yeah, there's something for you at the men's shed.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
TNT, and this is Robert Brennan filling in for Mike Ryan, and my very special guest and the man of the half hour is Alan Duller. So despite all the evidence of serious adverse reactions to the COVID injections, and they certainly don't provide sterilizing immunity or stop the viral transmission, many company vaccination mandates are still in place, including for airline companies. Alan Duller is a member of the Global Aviation Advocacy Coalition. He started flying in the UK in 1988 and now has accumulated 23,000 flight hours. That's a lot. Alan was recently fired after 14 years at Jetstar. That's the airline owned by Qantas. And the reason for the termination, quote unquote, serious misconduct for not complying with the company vaccine mandate. Prior to this, he was flying for British Airways based in London Heathrow, operating to the Arctic Circle, that would have been fun, and Africa, and also the Middle East. Much of his training was completed outside of Chicago before working as instructor and charter pilot in Palm Beach, Florida, before relocating and flying in the Caribbean. What a life. I'm getting green. He holds the American FAA, British and Australian airline pilot licenses. Good afternoon, Alan.
G'day, Robbie. Good to talk to you again.
The pleasure's all mine. Yes, we previously met at that cross-party Senate thing 2.0. So I also add that you're part of Freedom Flyers Australia, and that's a litigation group taking Qantas to the courts. And part of that is also the Magnificent 24, which is quite a good name for yourselves as a group. And you're one of the primary litigants. So tell us how things are going and what are we going to talk about today?
Well, it's all quite complicated, learning all the legal stuff. The original Magnificent 24 whittled its way down to about 18 with a few people that left the action. They got very, very nervous, which is obviously part of the mind games that mm-hmm. Qantas want to play to try and reduce their opposition. And due to the sort of social media publicity that I've managed to do on some of the channels, some of the Facebook people, and obviously with Sky News, we've got a little bit more visibility and we've had a lot more people join us. So our group now is up to over 50 mm-hmm. of litigants. So we've got the first original group and this second group forming, and we're going to be sharing the costs of the legal action to be able to take Qantas head to head. So mm-hmm. we are not going away is what they need to understand. And we are not going to give up. Because, you know, channels like yours, the TNT radio, and obviously many of the freedom senators and politicians there behind us, and the community that have resisted this far are behind us. So we are using every avenue we can to take this company to task for the wrong that they have done, and obviously shine a spotlight on all the other companies that have done so much wrong. So anyway, as far as the case goes, we are in the stage now where we are submitting our evidence. And the really encouraging thing is the evidence for our side is actually getting stronger by the day with the, you know, the adverse reactions coming out and the documents that have been released by Pfizer under court order of the biodistribution studies that Pfizer did themselves. Saying where this mRNA and spike protein actually migrated to in the body. So the information for this thing not being that good, i.e. the vaccines, is actually beneficial to us because the time it's taken, more information is coming out that's going to help us, which is actually going to weaken Qantas's position that these things were actually safe and effective to start with, which mm-hmm. has been their claim from the beginning. So the submissions of evidence is great. We've made a fantastic connections with some very, very high profile people that are at the cutting edge. Dr. Malone, mm-hmm. Peter McCullough, and Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long. She was the US military doctor whistleblower who was basically flagged up a lot of the adverse reactions that she was seeing in the military pilots that she was responsible for, and she's actually testified in front of Congress. So she's on our side as well, providing affidavits. So we're basically challenging Qantas now. They're not going to be able to find quality people that with information better than we're going to hit them with. So that's where we're at. So 6 weeks now of us submitting evidence, supporting our claims against the Qantas group. Then Qantas will get a six-week period so that they can submit their evidence to counter our claims. So that's going to be very, very interesting. Then the next date of significance is the 7th of December, where we sit down in front of the judge and basically he will say agree or not agree on what arguments are going to be going through to the actual court date, which will probably be in the early new year.
Okay, so he's going to agree on the 7th of December on what evidence and aspects of the case will be admitted into the case proper, which is even further into the future. You know, justice
right.
delayed, justice denied, but I guess that's the way it works. And as you say, we have the on our side, and it's fair to say that, you know, there is a side of which we're part, that we have the... We do have the best and brightest. We do have Peter McCullough and Robert Malone and the aeromedicine guru, Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long.
Yes, and not only do we have the best and brightest, the people that have stood up, i.e. myself and my group of colleagues that are involved with the action, doctors and physicians like yourself and the politicians, we seem to be the only individuals left in society that have got any morals, any ethics and any determination to be able to do this, because the other side are nothing but liars and frauds on the stuff that they've pushed. Mm. And they're just using deceit and censorship to further their aims. So it's just like we actually have got the moral high ground. It's cost us a lot personally in our families, and it's cost us a lot financially in our jobs, but it's a fight worth having. Because if we don't have a society that has a moral compass and ethics, we basically have anarchy. And, you know, it would look more like Mad Max, and we really don't want that.
That's right. And you know, you have between you, you have hundreds of thousands of flight hours. And I was thinking about how you were describing your that this is being the fight that it is, and it's sort of a play on metaphor. But I was watching the first half of the sequel to Top Gun last night, and you're like now a fighter pilot, a Top Gun of a kind.
Well, this is one of the conversations that I had with Hoodie. It's interesting that back in the dark days of the war in Europe, back in the 1940s, that we had the Battle of Britain, which was a very, very small number of fighter pilots that basically defended the country against this onslaught from the German might. And Churchill basically said, never has so much in the field of human conflict been owed by so many to so few. And it was the pilots that basically kept the country safe. And it would be interesting to see if those of us in aviation, you know, including the cabin crew and the engineers and everything that are involved in this case, it would be interesting that the aviators come to the rescue again in this instance. So, fingers crossed. We're doing what we can. It's going to take a lot of money, and it's certainly taken a psychological toll to try and stay strong against such a formidable enemy.
It will do because, as you say, there's already been a few who have fallen from the skies have left the case and under the weight of, you know, the pressure and the intimidation and the psychological trauma that comes from it. But you're right out there in front. You know, what's the tack you're taking? Because on one hand, like I'd say, the primary argument would be, well, it doesn't stop transmission, and so there's no utilitarian need in terms of me protecting someone else by having it. And it's not as if it's going to prevent transmission, that it's going to prevent you from bringing a virus into another country when you disembark and, you know, go
That's
and
right.
do whatever. But on the other hand, there's the risk of the virus. Let's say if you were to be sick on air, in the air, which they could rat test you. If you're going to be healthy as you board the plane, even for a very long haul flight, it's not like you're going to suddenly drop dead from COVID mid flight. It's just not reasonably going to happen.
That's right.
But there are potential risks from the vaccine itself, particularly with recent administration, with sudden cardiac events and so on and so forth. So speak to that.
Well, this is the thing. We're all familiar with the term sudden infant death syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a new one, sudden adult death syndrome. Now, I would argue that sudden adult death syndrome in a pilot that's in control of an aeroplane is probably a really bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And since it is a thing, then how do we know that the pilots who are vaccinated that are flying currently, because those of us that are unvaccinated are actually grounded, those that are in the air, how do we know that those pilots are not going to suffer a sudden adult death incident?
Mm-hmm.
And it has happened. And case in point, the American Airlines captain 1067 into Dallas-Fort Worth back at the beginning of the year, Captain Bob Snow, he suffered a cardiac arrest and basically flatlined 6 minutes after touchdown. Now, had that event happened at 7 minutes prior, 7 minutes earlier, he would have actually been in control at close to 100 feet, doing 300 kilometers an hour with 200 people on board.
Mm.
And that is a fact. And then just in the last few days, a flight in Russia, the pilot died on board and that plane made a diversion emergency landing. So it's happening. It's out there. It's a risk. And we have flagged that risk to CASA in formal letters, which have been ignored. And we have flagged it to the transport ministers, the shadow and the active minister, and it has been ignored. So they know that we in the Global Aviation Coalition have flagged this up as a serious issue that needs investigation. And they are choosing to do nothing. So it's a risk factor that we have never had to deal with before. that is a clear and present danger. And it only a fool would not want to know more. And this is the situation. And it could be deliberate that they are deliberately trying to destroy aviation. It's who knows. But certainly for the traveling public, there is a risk that has been induced that you haven't had to calculate for before. And there are two critical phases of flight, and that is the takeoff and just before landing, where if one pilot does something seriously wrong with the aeroplane, the other pilot does not have the time to be able to recover the situation.
Yes, and I was going to say, because they could always say, well, you have a co-pilot, you have certain automated systems, so there's a built-in redundancy there, but there are critical moments when
that's right. And this is the thing people need to understand, is that 100% of takeoffs are done manually and 99% of landings are done manually. There's only 1% of the landings are done fully automatic.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's usually when you're dealing with situations of low visibility and fog, where the airplane does a better job than the pilot because the airplane doesn't need eyeballs. So that manual maneuver, the takeoff and the landing, if there's an inadvertent control movement due to a pilot having a sudden adult death syndrome event, it's basically all over. You, like I say, you don't have the time. And our government and regulator don't seem to think this is an issue. They've classified this thing as a standard vaccine, which it is not. It's classified in the Pfizer's own documents filed with the SEC under the FDA classification as a gene therapy. That's official from the regulators in America and from Pfizer's own documents. This is not a standard vaccine. And that's the reason that I was not prepared to take it. I wasn't about to believe them. And we've fallen on our sword. So we're in the position that we're in, on the ground, safe, unemployed, but healthy. And there is a problem for everybody else that's still flying that we're trying to raise the awareness of. And at the moment, we're not getting anywhere.
Well, it ain't over yet. And on that note, we'll just take a quick break. This is TNT.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I can't tell you how much better I'll sleep tonight after learning some new information about the state of the U.S. Air Force. Fox News Digital reporting, a diversity and inclusion training program at the Air Force Academy in Colorado instructs cadets to use words that include all genders and refrain from saying things like mom and dad. The slide presentation titled Diversity and Inclusion, What It Is, Why We Care, and What We Can Do advises cadets to use person-centered and gender-neutral language when describing individuals. Some family members are headed by single parents, it says. Grandparents, foster parents, two moms, two dads, etc. Consider parent or caregiver instead of mom and dad. The presentation says use words that include all genders, folks or y'all instead of guys, partner instead of boyfriend or girlfriend. The story says at the beginning of the training, cadets are assured that what's said here stays in the room. Thankfully, at least one cadet was so disturbed by this woke crap that, well, he spilled the beans. Now let's end it all. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Democracy is under attack. The Australian government wants to control free speech and the internet with the Australian Code of Practice on Disinformation and Misinformation. Disagree with what government is saying and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Yes, this is TNT, Robert Brennan. My very special guest, Captain Alan Dana, part of the Australian Freedom Fighters, the Global Aviation Advocacy Coalition, and the magnificent, well, now 18, taking Qantas to court over the vaccine mandate. So that's the situation with Qantas, is that they're going to fight you all the way. What about the other airlines? Like, there's this, like, Alliance Airlines, That's said to be the first Australian airline to make the vaccine compulsory. What are they up to now?
That's correct. They were the first to mandate. The smaller companies were the ones used as the test bed to see what kind of resistance they were going to get, one from the employees and two from the unions. And they saw that the unions were basically a Trojan horse and sold everybody out, take their money and basically not do their job. And Alliance now have actually introduced the flu shot to make that mandatory. So not only did they have to get the double and then take the booster, because some of the airplanes occasionally fly to WA when they were requiring it. Mm-hmm. So the booster was mandated. They've also mandated the flu shot. Now, I'll just read you the paragraph from their policy. Somebody sent it to me. It says procedure, risk of exposure. It says vaccination has been identified as a measure to provide immunity for influenza and COVID-19. In the aviation sector, there is a significant occupational risk of acquiring influenza and COVID-19. And due to this high risk, compulsory vaccination is required for all Alliance employees and contractors for both influenza and COVID-19. So there you have it. It's mandated the flu vaccine for aircrew. When right back at the beginning in 2020, the airlines were saying there's a very good air filtration systems on board the airplane, good circulation. There was no need to wear a mask. You remember that? Everyone mm-hmm. seemed to have forgotten that. And now we're into a situation where three shots of the COVID shots is mandatory and the flu shot is. Now, the other thing that's interesting about the flu shot is the wonderful pharmaceutical companies from the United States have actually developed an mRNA version of the flu shot. And I would be surprised if anyone is actually told which version they're getting if they go for a flu shot. That would be because you just think it's just a standard shot. And not many people will be aware that that's actually been developed and is actually going to be pushed out into the market. So how do you know? So if you could have actually been a person that said, well, I'm not taking the COVID shots, but I'll go and get my flu shot because I've had one every year. And now they're going to give you an mRNA. And it's possible that it could have the same effects, the negative effects that we're trying to highlight as the COVID shots. Don't know. I'm not a medic. I have no idea. But it's certainly a question.
It is. It is a question. And as you say, Moderna has gone to phase 3 with their mRNA flu shots and RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, mRNA shot, as well as what you could call it, younger generation, later generation COVID shots, and it goes on and on and on. That's right. And Pfizer, I imagine, doing similar. But I know what Moderna is up to. So yeah, they're at phase 3, and some although it's the flu mRNA one won't be coding for spike protein, which is of concern. Mm-hmm. Who knows what epigenetic issues that might come from it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's what Alliance is. What are doing? What about Virgin?
Virgin are still hanging on to their mandate for vaccines, the same way that Alan Joyce is hanging on to his mm-hmm. his policy, very much like Gollum from Lord of the Rings. You know, mm-hmm. it's they just won't let it go. You know, it was obvious that they were going to get rid of the requirement for international travellers, but they keep it for the aircrew and mm-hmm. and the staff at the airline. So it was commercial suicide. So, and that was very, very obvious. So it's suddenly the cabin of the airplane is not dangerous for anyone to be vaccinated or unvaccinated, but the crew have to be. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's just like they're ruining their business. But, you know, they're allowed to do that if they want to. Virgin's the same. The new airline, I think it's called Bonza or something. Bonza from... where is it? Sunshine Coast. They're operating, and so there's no mandates anywhere. But they've initiated it for all of their staff. Now they're a new startup airline, and they can start with a new set of rules, whether that's the vaccine requirement or not. That's up to them. Mm-hmm. But our big fight with the guys at Virgin who were suing Virgin and us who were suing Qantas and Jetstar, is that we had a contract that had nothing about vaccinations in it. So bringing in a policy is actually a major change to your contract, because they have said that your continued employment is conditional on you being vaccinated. So that's a change to your conditions. That's the reason that we're suing. I mean, it's nothing to do really with the science of efficacy of the vaccine. It's just any employee, doesn't matter whether it's airlines, Woolies, or any other business in the country, if you had a permanent contract that had nothing about a vaccine in it, and the company have terminated you, they have basically breached your contract, because they had an option within the Fair Work Act to introduce a change, just saying, look, we want to bring this change in. It's a vaccine requirement. You know, will you agree to it? If you don't agree to it, the way that the company can get out of your agreement is to pay you off to leave. And they chose not to do that. They did it the cheap, underhanded way of trumping up a charge of serious misconduct and firing us. Now, as I've said before, serious misconduct is the preserve of theft, assault, sexual assault, willful breaches of safety protocols, being drunk on duty.
Yes.
We didn't do any of that.
Well, that's right. Unless that was well defined and well qualified with a descriptor, if you were to go to work somewhere else, and that's it, just the fact of having it alone, even without any defense, just the two words, serious misconduct, it's enough to bin your application.
That's right. Yeah. It's defamatory, and we are actually thinking about taking out defamatory lawsuits against the individuals that signed our termination letters. Mm-hmm. So they need to be worried about that. But also, the one other point that's really important that your listeners need to understand is the policy itself, because it contained a threat, and that was get vaccinated or be terminated, that threat prohibits a medical practitioner from administering the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Now, it's important that the medical practitioner knows that you are there under threat. Because once they know, under their standard operating procedures of the medical ethics, which is contained in the Australian Immunisation Handbook, it states quite clearly there is informed consent, which is the consent that the patient gives to the doctor to proceed, and then the doctor is required to screen that patient to see if their informed consent is valid. And it becomes invalid if the patient in front of them is there under any pressure whatsoever.
That's so right. Yes, we had
go ahead.
Yeah, no, you speak.
Yeah, so this is really important. At the time that businesses were mandating, the majority of medical personnel out there, doctors, nurses, paramedics, and pharmacists, would have known that many of the people coming before them would have been there under threat. They are required by their guidelines to get to screen and find out if the consent that the patient is giving them is valid, and if there is any element of undue pressure, coercion, or manipulation, they must in law refuse to vaccinate. And many of them didn't. And they would have known that many of these people coming for the vaccination were there under threat. So they are guilty of some level of malfeasance, for sure. And if anyone was there under threat and was injured, they may have an opportunity to go back to the person that vaccinated them, and sue them or lay criminal charges. That you didn't screen me to see if I was there under pressure. I didn't tell you because I didn't know that I needed to tell you. So there it looks like there could be a lot of litigation, particularly if people are injured from any of the shots that they've received. And this is a really important point. Valid consent and informed consent are two different things. So as I say, I just reiterate, the informed consent is from the patient to the doctor, and the doctor is required to establish whether that informed consent is valid. And it says in their document, legally valid, which means that there is a legal penalty possible against that doctor. If you go into a hospital for a procedure, like for an anesthetic or something, they get you to sign documentation that you give your consent to be put under. And if they don't get that and you have a problem, they can lose their medical license.
I absolutely agree with you. Yes, those contextual factors need to be aired, considered, known to the patient, and agreed by the patient. Absolutely. So this has been TNT, and this is Alan Duller. See their website, which is Freedom Flyers, Aussie Freedom Flyers. And, good luck with the case. We'll stay in touch.